My name is Pete Martin, and I live in Plymouth. And I have some questions for both Mr. Scott and Mr. Harrington. I would like to know if you both have read and understand and agree with Section 12A of the New Hampshire Constitution, which forbids the use of eminent domain for private profit or corporations.
Like any other citizen, I've been following a lot of the debate on eminent domain. Again, as a PUC commissioner, I'm not going to be making policy and making law per se. I'm going to be interpreting that and implementing that. So, I know that sounds like a hedge, but I don't.
Well, they expressly forbids the use of eminent domain for private for-profit corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Projects. And I guess my next question to both of you would be, given what 12A states expressly, if a public utility or some corporation named as a public utility should come before you and request the use of eminent domain power, and then if you discovered that they were private for profit and not a public need, what would your answer be?
Well, let me just give on this a little bit. I'm familiar with 12A. It was passed a few years ago based on the Kelo decision by the Supreme Court, which had to do with the taking of property in Connecticut, which regretfully that property, the property that was going to be built there never got built. The people lost their house anyways. It was a kind of a sad state of affairs. I am very familiar with that. I can tell you I voted in favor of the constitutional amendment. As far as the specifics of what would happen, that there's also an implementing law. I don't have the RSA number memorized right now, but there's an implementing law that addresses specifically what you're talking about. It's been this great debate's been going on this in the House. That's the attempt to amend it.
371:1.
I'll take your word for it. I don't have it memorized, but in that it says that a public utility may petition the PUC for eminent domain, if it's something to the effect, if they can show that it's necessary for them to perform their public purpose. Now, beyond that, again, because that's something, if I was to be confirmed, that I may have to address with, because that's the present law, even though there's a bunch of different amendments out there and changes, nothing's been changed. So I really can't say any comment to it other than that particular law, and if the gentleman's correct, that number, that would be the law that we would have to evaluate this under as a member of the commission.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is that we understand that the strictures of 12A come first, and what I would like to know is, do you agree with that?
On a generic basis, certainly the Constitution of the state of New Hampshire.
So if a private corporation came before you, excuse me.
But again, and I hate to say this, but I've gone over this with the general counsel, and these are the type of questions she's advised us for me to avoid answering any more specific than, I think the Constitution is the supreme law of the state of New Hampshire.
Mr. Harrington, at the 648 public hearings, you stated that there was no definitive definition of system reliability.
That's correct. I think it was reliability was the word that was used in the proposed list.
In the 2009 and 2010 installed capacity requirements from ISO, they not only give the planning model for system reliability, they actually give you a formula. And I will give you a copy of that. They actually give you a formula for solving the ISO system reliability. And I will give you a copy of it.
It's a very, very complicated process. And for someone to say that's needed for reliability, the reason I was asked to come over that, and I don't think I'm going to violate anything on by saying this, it was very clear. We were asked, how do you get a law? The intent of the law was clear. The intent of the law was to, how do we do it so eminent domain could not be used for Northern Pass? We took no position on that, the commission said, but technically we will help you with the law. And if you put out, as that law was written, something to the effect that unless it's needed for system reliability, That, as a former legislature, I can tell you, is a good compromise wording, that it sounds good because you can get people around the table to agree with it. But as a regulator, I tell you, it stinks because it's way too ambiguous and open to interpretation. System reliability is determined by who? Who's going to make that determination? It doesn't say in that law. Ultimately, if you're going to go back to the regional system plan and say that it was a project listed in the regional system plan as required for reliability, many of those projects are considered reliability projects, but not at 100%, meaning 80% of the cost would be socialized throughout New England. 20% of the cost would be localized, as in the case of Southwest Connecticut, because they decided to put a lot of the project underground. They had to pay 100% of about $120 million of that project. The rest was socialized. And ultimately, that decision gets approved by FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Now, like I say, I wasn't born in New Hampshire, but I've lived here for a long time, and I spent 4 years in the legislature, and I don't think the people in New Hampshire really want to have the decision made on when eminent domain is used in their state be determined by bureaucrats in Washington. And under that present thing, that would be the most direct route to get there. It would have been approved by FERC, because if you go with that loose definition of reliability, that's the best you could get to. Certainly the commission, PUC, has no, they have no legal authority, I guess, that I'm aware of, to say this is needed for reliability or this isn't, because those transmission projects are federal jurisdiction and not state.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move. Have you finished?
I have one more.
This is just some information. ISO New England Power System study maps and commentary show a picture of transmission projects that, if built, would turn New Hampshire into a dense network of power line corridors between Canadian power producers and markets to our south. Our state would, in effect, be sacrificed for the benefit of Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York. How do you feel about that, either of you or both of you?
Again, difficult question for me, I suppose. Don't have the map in front of me, but I think I understand. If I could paraphrase perhaps for you, is you ask me what do I feel about New Hampshire perhaps being a net exporter of power to the benefit of other states? Would that be a good?
Basically, what we're concerned with is that we, by
geographic location, are between the people who want to sell it and the people who want to buy it. And if we're not very, very careful and very thoughtful, we'll be turned into one giant power corridor, as you can see. This is the plan from the 2030 power study for New England from ISO.
I can help a little bit on this. That's not exactly what this is. This is a compilation of different plans that are going on. Some of these are proposed plans by private developers, such as the Northern Pass plan coming down. The purple one over here, you see, would have come down from the site of the old main Yankee plant down to Boston. That's what's called the Neptune line. That's a proposed one by a private developer as well. A lot of this, what's referred to as the backbone loop, that's all from the governor's blueprint. And what that was done, it was a study that the six governors of New Hampshire asked that ISO New England do, to say, how can we maximize the use of renewable energy produced in New England and get it to the places where it needs to go to. Now, there's a lot of that energy could come from northern New Hampshire and mostly from northern Maine, where they have the best wind resources up there, and some from northern Vermont as well. The problem is, as probably most people are aware, Maine and New Hampshire both already produce more power than they consume. So if you want to tap those resources, then you have to get the power someplace where it's going to be used, and that's southern New England. And a lot of this is also it's more of a national basis. It's kind of gets really complicated, but on a national basis, there's a big push for a lot of the people, especially from the Midwest, that they want to have all the wind, that's really huge wind resources in the Dakotas, in Iowa and Kansas and places like that, and they want to put in massive transmission lines to bring that into the Northeast, to potentially coming into New England. We would then have to pay for these transmission lines to bring it here. The thoughts of the governors and the idea behind this plan is that if we're going to do a large-scale renewables, we're much better off trying to produce the renewables here, creating jobs in New England, paying taxes in New England on those plants, rather than paying to buy the electricity from the Midwest. So this is like I say, it's not, I wouldn't say this is disingenuous, but this is a compilation of different things put together. And this backbone thing specifically, the one that you see coming along like this, I don't know if you can see it, but this one that comes down from up here, northern, this is northern Maine, and then over here, this is what's required electrically to get the power from northern New Hampshire and northern Maine and get it down to Massachusetts. But all of this is proposals, and it's theoretical at this time, and the only one that's actually done any filing is this one, the Northern Pass Project, and then called the Northeast Energy Link, which is a joint project by National Grid and Bangor Hydroelectric. They're in the preliminary stages. They have filed it with FERC, but for technical reasons, the ISO New England has had a lot of problems with that line. I won't try to get into the technical thing here. But.